23. Swallow. On the title page of my pilot script for the Norwich-based detective series Swallow, I wrote the words, "Dedicated to the memory of Stacey Morgan, 7. Stacey wasn't dead. She'd never even existed, actually. But I thought it would set a poignant tone for the episode and/or gain enough pity to sway the mind of a commissioner. But I've scrubbed Stacey's name off now and replaced it with that of Pete Gabitas, who did exist and is now dead. He's sorely missed. I'm often asked if I have a manager or agent, and instead of answering with words, I used to take out a £10 note, tear a quarter off it, then scrunch it up and throw it in a bin. I've stopped doing it now. Never had one. Waste of money. And as my career has proved beyond doubt, I've never needed one. But if anyone came close to filling the role of agent manager, it would have been Pete Gabitas, the MD of Blue Barn Media. Pete was a big-hearted, big-bellied guy who liked nothing more than providing cut-price production facilities to the region's most creative minds, and then rounding the day off with a pint or two. We were kindred spirits, each/both sharing a love of Norwich, quality music, and hovercrafts. Does he say the unsayable? You better believe it. He's like Norfolk's very own Jeremy Clarkson, but one who actually believes the stuff he comes out with. He is whip-smart. He had his share of enemies, sure, but that comes with the territory when you're hoovering up the lion's share of corporate production and post-production contracts in the North Norfolk region. People were forever trying to topple him off his perch, something I found especially callous when he revealed he was suffering from a serious illness, the little-known tall poppy syndrome. All healthy competition, you might think, until I tell you that Pete died in a car accident on the 1st of April 2005. I say accident advisedly. There are many of us who suspect foul play. I'm no conspiracy theorist, although I often regale dinner parties blow by blow with the arguments advanced by Capricorn 1 and JFK, but I am convinced that Pete was murdered. It was around 11:30 when his wife's Peugeot 306 cabriolet with red interior careered off the road and into a primary school. Yes, he was way over the drink-drive limit, and ordinarily I'd agree that the alcohol could have been a factor. But knowing Pete as I do/did, I can assure you he's a better driver when drunk. So much so that he's often given me a lift home when he's been drunk and I've been sober. That night he'd had 6 pints of lager and half a bottle of wine, pretty much the sweet spot for his driving capability. To the untrained eye, he looked very, very drunk. To the trained eye, my eye, I knew that he was fine to drive. So having ruled out alcohol as a contributing factor in the crash, you have to ask, who wanted Pete dead, and how did they do it? I'm in the process of making a YouTube video about the case under the banner of Alan Partridge Scrutinizers, hopefully the first of many. Funnily enough, it's the kind of case that would be perfect for a regional detective like Swallow. Pete was a massive fan of Swallow, perhaps seeing a little of himself in the rule-breaking cynic. I'll give you the quick pitch now. Swallow is a cool 50. He works in Norfolk CID, whereas most regional detectives drive a classic or unusual car. Swallow has saved up to buy a brand new 5-door Audi A3 turbo diesel in metallic graphite grey with a black fabric interior. He's not interested in sat-nav leather seats or CD stacker systems. That, to Swallow, is just so much bullshit. His vice? Well, booze has been done, so I thought it would be quite nice if he was bulimic. I got the idea from seeing John Prescott cleaning himself up in the toilets of the Savoy. Fastidious but austere, Swallow always carries a checklist of items. A comb, 2 biros, fisherman's friends, the mint rather than the people, and a faint smell of vomit. Plus an evidence bag which he never uses for evidence, but keeps folded in the right-hand pocket of his donkey jacket in case he has a big meal. Yes, Swallow's always very well turned out, with pressed slacks, black leather tie, buffed-up shoes, and a rich brown leather jacket. He has a restless mind. Even in his downtime, he has to occupy himself. But rather than immerse himself in chess, been done, Swallow solves dingbats and other word-related puzzles, including word searches. He likes nothing more than to sit down with a copy of The Puzzler in a wicker chair, then look out over the fens and immerse himself in puzzles. He also has a weakness for doing 10,000-piece jigsaws. In case you hadn't noticed, this is a metaphor for solving a case. and in the last episode we'd see him put in the final piece and suddenly seeing that it depicts the face of the local con man. Quite how or why this would work isn't yet scoped out. He's also a keen cook, gardener and birder. He has no middle fingers on one hand, so he can't swear, but is permanently doing the heavy metal sign. I see Swallow as something of an enigma. He has the largest collection of samurai swords in Europe, but no one knows where he got them from. And we're not cooking or tending to his gardens or completing jigsaws or finding words or watching rare wetland birds. He plays kendo, the Japanese martial art with body armor and big sticks of bamboo, shinai. His sparring partner and friend is Chan, a Chinese widower who owns a laundry next to Wallace Shoes on Exchange Street in Norwich. He's a useful foil to Swallow because, as a laundryman, he doesn't think like a police officer. Throughout the pilot episode, we see Swallow constantly harassing a circus, even though left-wing, university-educated police chiefs reprimand him for it. But at the end of the pilot episode, his right-wing views are vindicated when he blows the lid on a drug-smuggling racket. He works out that the drugs are being smuggled in the collective rector of circus elephants when he spots bags of drugs among the grassy balls of dung on the circus floor. He lives alone. His marriage broke down because his wife was too selfish to recognize his cleverness. Is he politically correct? Who, Swallow? No chance. He's old school and is aware that a disproportionately high amount of crime is committed by the unemployed and asylum seekers. So why not stop them and shake them down? The squares at Police HQ can swivel. In the pilot episode, Swallow suddenly notices there are no black people in Norfolk. Have they been spirited away? Or were they never there? He has to crack the case. Also in the pilot episode, he wages a war against the travelling community who almost never have the correct documentation for their vehicles. He frequently impounds them to get them off the road. The pilot episode follows Swallow as he's assigned a naive young sidekick, DC Wideye, a stickler for the rules. Together, this odd couple have come together to find out who's been fly-tipping in the residential area. It goes without saying the show will look terrific. The series will be peppered with skyscapes of Norfolk, while the opening sequence will be shots of huge deciduous oaks, intercut with two masked men playing kendo, intercut with a drive-by shooting, intercut with two hands playing a jigsaw. The reveal at the end is that the Kenshi are Swallow and Chan, and the jigsaw player is also Swallow. Incredibly, the rights to Swallow are still available for purchase. I can be contacted through the publishers.